270. That's what's on the menu. USDA Prime, 14-ounce New York strip, 16-ounce ribeye, 22-ounce porterhouse, or a barrel-cut filet mignon. And with fresh seafood flown in daily, surf and sirloin. For reservations, call 822-3637 or through the app Open Table or online at surfandsirloin.com.
Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives. Running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing on earth like the NFL. And there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. No one gives you more ways to win online than MyBookie. They've got faster payouts and better lines than any other sports action and on-site. Did the game already start? Don't sweat it. MyBookie also offers in-game live action on all your favorite sporting events. Plus, if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. When all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. So don't sit on the sidelines this season. Get in the game with MyBookie. If you're going to bet this football season, be smart. Bet with the best at MyBookie. And if you sign up today, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's up to $1,000 in free money to wager on your favorite teams. Go to MyBookie now and enter promo code RADIO to redeem this exclusive offer. That's promo code RADIO. Play, win, get paid. MyBookie.
Barley is the soul of Budweiser. That's why we've been working with the same family-owned American farms for more than 50 years to harvest it. The secrets to growing this grain perfectly have been passed down through three generations. For them, it's a legacy. And it's why only the best barley and locally sourced ingredients are used to make Budweiser. Budweiser is proudly raised across America. This Bud's from our barley farmers. This Bud's for you. Enjoy responsibly. Budweiser Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep.
When are we ever going to get rid of this stinking weather?
Just direct your feet.
Brother.
To sunny.
Can I hardly see a bright sun in your face?
Can't you?
What, going home at night now? If you're headed west.
And that happy
pretty tough.
Is your
and visor only does so much.
Can be so
but I'm not complaining. I love it. You should go outside today, right now. Wherever you work, whatever you do, just get up, unless you're in surgery. If you're a doctor and you're performing surgery, get up and just walk outside and just take it in.
I hate it when I'm driving home and that sun
is we just said that,
right.
Dan. You should be listening.
No, I was, but I...
Steak and eggs and steak. That's what you should have for breakfast.
That's right.
Delicious. Steak and eggs and eggs and steak. Just making sure you heard. I got it.
You know, I've never had steak and eggs for breakfast.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Great.
Never. No.
Wow.
That's just not something
amazing
you have at the house.
Agreed.
Oh, grab the eggs and the steak.
Yeah,
and
delicious.
I've never ordered it.
A breakfast steak?
Oh, yeah. You know what I like? Sausage and eggs. Scrambled eggs and good country pork sausage. That's what. Now I'm hungry. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a fantastic day. This is, I've said this before, we get about 15 days all year like this.
Yeah.
Blue, not a cloud in the sky. Humidity is low. Temperature is perfect. I wish everybody could just go outside, including me. I'd like to have an extension cord for this microphone and just sit out in a lawn chair on the loading dock behind this building and do my part of the show.
Hmm.
But hey, in 2 hours and 45 minutes, we'll be able to go outside. Welcome to the Large Morning Show in the afternoon, everybody, on this 8th of October, another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
Oh, it's the 3rd of June. Hey, by the way, the door is open to the studio, which is unusual. Studios, they have really big, thick doors and we usually close them. But it's hot in here and it's cool outside. So if you hear, you know, people talking out in the hallway, for what? We'll just let it go because, you know, it feels good to have the door open.
You're talking about the sun and driving home.
Mm-hmm.
I have pulled over and have gone...
Wait until the sun goes down?
Yes, and gone into a store until the sun gets down below the horizon so you can actually see to drive
home.
Well,
your vision is all screwed up anyway.
It's brutal.
I've never pulled over because of the sun. I pulled over a couple of times in heavy, heavy rain, but not because of the sun. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to complain about a day like today. I don't care how bright it is. It's a fantastic day. And one of the things that... you might do if you can and you have the time on a day like today is just go by a hospital for about an hour and just stop in and say hello to a couple people who cannot be outside. They can only look out the window. Just a suggestion. We have a thing called the Burke segment and it goes a little something like this. Does anybody have anything to say?
I do.
I'd like to introduce the man wearing a shirt, and it's the name of a restaurant, and I'm not going to say it because they have a tremendous opportunity to advertise here on this show, and they don't take advantage of it.
They do not.
Because this guy works there.
Right.
So for now, I'll just say wearing his restaurant shirt. Trevor Limestone Limey Phillips, what do you have?
All right, so I got two things
today.
You're
welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Do you want the quick one first, or do you want the kind of long story?
I think the quick one first.
Okay.
Tim, what do you think?
I think most guys shouldn't ask another guy that question.
You want the quick one?
He's got a point.
Quick one first, you want the long one first.
All right, quick story first.
Yeah, you need to say story.
Okay, there we go.
I'm for the quick story first.
Yeah, I agree.
Two out of three, you don't need to know what Dan thinks. Go ahead.
All right. So, don't need to know what Dan thinks. All right, so this right here.
Oh, that's your baby.
That's my baby's heartbeat. Listen.
Yeah. That sounds strong to me.
That is strong. It's strong as heck. The second one, not so good. So I was working at the restaurant earlier today, and we had a group of ladies come in, sit down, you know, catching up once a month, having some lunch together.
I call them the cacklers.
The cacklers, okay.
They get the hens, they get together, and they cackle.
They cackle.
How old were these women?
Maybe mid-60s, mm-hmm. upper.
How many were there?
They were about eight. No, there were eight.
They got a lot to cackle about.
Oh, yeah. So, well, all right, then, well, you know, we had this group of cacklers in the restaurant. And one of them, we'll call her Doreen.
They usually go to the Cackle Barrel restaurant.
Thank you.
See what you did there.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
So Doreen was wearing this really kind of nice outfit.
Now,
she looked like
a
sweet crime manner. No, I'm just calling her Doreen.
Oh, okay.
You know, one of them is called Doreen, so we know who.
And that's
I'm
a good
about.
Name because now it's an old name.
Exactly.
Nobody names their kid Doreen.
And Doreen had this really nice, like, you know, grandmother outfit, a nice dark blue shirt, and then these really, 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 really white pants.
Mm.
All right. So I'm cleaning a table, and Doreen is getting up, and she's walking around to the different members of the cackle group saying hello.
I hope
you
this
know,
is not
going to
include some sort of discharge.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
too late for that. You're going to be let down for that.
Too late.
And one of the waitresses came over to me, and she's like, hey, Trevor, look over there. I think that woman pooed herself.
Oh!
And I look over, and right down the crack is just this.
Brown?
And you can tell, you know, it's not like she accidentally set in dirt or anything like that. It's just perfect little pebble dash. Just
Morse
like,
code.
Whatever.
Fecal Morse code.
It was fecal Morse code.
Help me.
Dot dash.
And I mean, like, the purest white pants and just the positioning of it and the color. Fecal matter has its own color.
Was her shirt, like, long enough to cover it up
no,
if she was standing
no,
up or anything?
No, it was not.
Now,
it
she's walking not. Around saying...
Saying hello to all of her friends.
So as she arrived. This didn't happen at the end of the meal.
Oh, no, this is like midway through the meal. So I'm guessing that she tried to cut one and maybe
did she eventually become aware of it?
I don't know because, I mean... Part of me wanted to go over and just be like, excuse me, madam, you may have had an accident. But then what do I mean, how do you say that? Just like,
You just did it.
I think you might have cracked your pants.
No, you just like you did it. I just thought you should know. It looks like you may have had an accident in your pants. I just thought you'd know.
I don't know.
It's tough to do.
I would have handed her a note.
It just handed her a note. And just walked away.
That's better.
And then that could have been, yeah.
And just skip dodge and just let her do what she needs to do.
Someone in the restaurant handed me this note to give to you.
It just said, hey, shark pants.
But, I would have written the note like this. Ma'am, there are 11 employees here, and we have voted 11-0 that you have shart your pants.
Poor thing.
That way none of you has to take, you know...
Take the rap.
Right.
Yeah, true. But no, yeah. I think at one point she did, because I remember as I was walking around that she was talking to somebody in the middle of the table, and then for the next couple of seconds she was sitting down in her seat and not getting up and just kind of looking really undercover. Well, I mean, maybe if it was just a little poot, maybe it didn't, like, you know, it wasn't that bad, but it was enough to stain.
Maybe it was an old stain. Maybe she hadn't...
I don't know. I mean, this stain was...
Fresh.
I mean, the color was...
Fresh color.
Yeah.
Like blood,
fresh.
It's a certain color, and then three days later it's darker.
Right. Yeah, this one was, like, neon poop. You know,
but if there are eight women, here's the hard. If they didn't see it, and there are eight of them, you know that. Yeah, you don't know who it is, so you don't know who to call out.
Exactly.
If it were guys, they'd go, "Hey, who sharted?" Guys would just do that. I don't think women would.
They would suss it out. Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of just let her go.
Guys would go, "Okay, everybody stand up. Now let's see who this is.
Who's done this?" But yeah, I don't know if her friends discovered, because they might have just thought, you know, it was a drive-by. And
what is your greatest restaurant story? See, my boys are in the restaurant business, and they tell me stories.
Oh.
And some of them, I can hardly even believe it.
The best one was when I was 17 and I was working at a hotel. We had just got done with a Christmas party, and I went to the service elevator to take some of the dirty tablecloths to the laundry, right? In a hotel, everything has that. So as the door opens, I see two people getting it on. And I mean, like
really doing it?
Oh, yeah. They were going at it.
In the elevator?
In the elevator. And
did you join in?
No, I did not join in. And as the door opens, the guy turns around and looks at me and says, "Oh, it's not going up."
Oh.
And then the door, what? I just kind of step back and the door's just
That's
closed.
What she said.
And I've always wondered to myself, like, what was he talking about in that situation?
One of two things.
The elevator or him. His, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, or his Johnson.
Do they say Willy in
Yes, they do.
His Willy.
Yeah, his Willy. Yeah, so
I've never liked that. It's too childish. I don't like Johnson is okay.
Yeah, Johnson is
it's
fine.
It's not going up.
Yeah, it's See, not
she,
going
you
up.
Shouldn't think she would have said that.
Well, I mean, she looked like she was having a good time, so I don't know how
drunk she
was.
So that's your best restaurant story?
I think so, yeah. Well, for right now, what I can remember, that's the best
one. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know how long, Tim here, how long did you cook at Denny's? Not very long, right?
No, but I have a really good restaurant story.
Go. Let's go. Let's have it.
I used to be an investigative reporter for a crime magazine on the side.
What?
A long time ago.
Hold on. Let me add that to the...
No, I actually used to own...
While you worked in...
While I worked as a radio talk show host in Kentucky, I owned a magazine. It was called Snitch. And it was actually a franchise. They had versions in San Diego, Cincinnati, Louisville, Lexington, Georgia, South Carolina. There was about 15 markets it was in at one point. And at one point, I was the co-owner of two of them. And
I think I read. Oh, no. You know what? I'm confusing it with another kind of magazine called Snatch.
Yeah, I know. That was
different.
That's what you call natural light when you're in college. Yeah. That's what you call that beer. So I wrote a story about this kid who worked at a restaurant similar to Limey's, you know, a nice place with pizza and a nice bar, you know, and the whole bit. And this kid was a big dude, and he was about 18, 19 years old, and he climbed up through one of the ceiling panels in the restaurant. And crawled over to where the manager's office was and then hid there for about 5 hours until the restaurant closed because he was going to rob.
Drop down.
He was going to drop down and rob the place. Unbeknownst to him, there was motion-activated sensors in this managerial restaurant, which was about the size of our bathroom here. I mean, this tiny little room. Right. It had a safe in it.
This sounds like my son's office at the restaurant.
Very small. Very, very small. So this kid gets in there. It triggers a silent alarm for the police. He's got an accomplice in this deal. The accomplice is in the getaway car out front. When he hears the police cars and the sirens coming, the accomplice bails off.
No, that's a good...
So now the kid's on his own, right? Without exaggeration, this kid was 6'4", 250. I mean, he was just a really, really big kid who worked there. Well, he got into the safe somehow, and he had cash on hand. Well, this kid hears the sirens, and he decides to run out the back door, and... He dropped his cell phone on the way out the back door and didn't realize it.
Not good.
And kept on going. And the cops get to the scene, and they're like, they're investigating what's going on. And here, all of a sudden, they hear this ring, ring. And the kid's cell phone is ringing on the steps that led to the it was a little landing and about seven steps to get down to the parking lot, and then you're out of there. And they heard this phone ringing, and they went out and picked it up. And one of the detectives, who was a buddy of mine, picks up and he's going, in a real low voice, he goes, "What's up?" Yeah. Guy's like, "Where you at?" I'm running.
It's the getaway driver.
Right, the getaway driver. And the cop is acting like the kid. He's like, I'm here, man. They're here. They're all over me. I'm in the woods. I need a place to hide out. Where do I go? Well, come to my place, man. What's your address again? I forgot your address. And the kid gives him his address.
Oh, beautiful. This is beautiful.
Oh, my.
And the kid had already known. Just the cops go to the house, and they arrested both kids on the spot, and they recovered the money within an hour of the robbery going down.
Perfect. Wow.
I wrote a big story about that, interviewed the kid and the manager and the cop, and took photos of it and the whole bit. It was a fun gig.
I love it when criminals are stupid.
It was a fun side gig to have.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Usually, I'll tell you who has great stories. If you're ever at a gathering or holiday party and people migrate toward these people, any cop has, they can't even tell all the stories they have.
Mm-hmm.
Any restaurant person who manages or has worked in restaurants a long time, those people always have stories. And the other is doctors, especially emergency room doctors.
Yeah.
They have the greatest stories, and you cannot even believe what they see.
I wonder, on average, how many of those stories, like emergency situations, is something stuck inside of a person?
Most of them, and it's the rectum.
Oh.
And it's beyond, well, I mean, it's beyond belief. Rectum. It is beyond belief what people put in there. This guy, we have a friend, and he still lives in St. Louis, and he still works the emergency room, and I'm not going to say what hospital, but he told us, this was years ago, he told the stories, and you just sit there and you go, no, you're making it up. He's not making it up. And when I tried to go to college before I got kicked out, there was a guy at school, and his part-time job while he was going to school was he worked in an emergency room in admitting. In other words, when you go in, they go, okay, well, here's the paper, fill it out, and you have to write down why you're there.
Right.
And he said, I said, give me your best story. And he said, this blonde woman, extremely attractive, came in, and she said, I need to see a doctor, like, right away. And he goes, well, now, just fill this out. She goes, I right away, I need to see that. He said, ma'am? Because she didn't look like she's bleeding.
Right.
Fill it out. And she was very reluctant. And finally, when she gave him back the paper, it said, I have a hot dog stuck in my rectum. Now,
a hot dog.
Now, wouldn't you think you just wait and eventually
maybe go eat some bread?
But she was panicked because she couldn't get it out, and she was just freaked out.
Right.
So they had to remove it. Now, how embarrassing is it when you have to say to the doctor, I have a hot dog up my right? And they're not going to ask, how did it get there? They know how it got there. You shoved it up there.
Yeah.
And why?
Slip and
fall. I'll never know. Yeah. You didn't, yeah. So I fell down. Yeah. And it was on the floor.
But that's mushy enough that I would have thought a laxative would have
pushed
that out.
Thank you. That's exactly what when I say, if you wait. Yeah. I think she just panicked and assumed something would do something horrible to her. So she went in and had to say those words.
It's food. So would the body digest it a little bit while it's in there? I mean, I know
what is the deal with people who are obsessed with pushing stuff in there? What is that? There's got to be a name for that. There's a name. There has to be for that disorder.
I think it's just a kink.
You know what? You know what compulsion is?
Yes.
What is it?
Well, you can't do something.
I'm sorry. Consumption.
Oh no, I haven't.
It's when people eat things like coins. They swallow.
Oh, really?
Bizarre things. Coins, little toys, Legos. Consumption.
That reminds me of one of the most outrageous scenes of the show Banshee that you got me hooked on with Dan Buffa, where in the first season there's a scene in which a guy is assaulting a woman and he takes cocaine in his hand and he shoves it between her legs against her will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I never would have thought that's a way that you could ingest cocaine.
But I'll tell you why I think it is. I think the membrane and the lining, it absorbs quickly into the bloodstream.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm telling you, man, people find if anything can be done to the body, there are people who will figure if something can be pierced or tattooed or shoved something into it, they'll find it. George is on the phone. We'll get back to the Burke segment in a moment, but our policy is listeners first. And I didn't give the number.
Thank you, Frank.
George, how are you?
I'm doing well. AM and the PM.
Thank you. What do you have for us, George?
As you know, in the past, I've told you my dad was a dentist before he passed away, and they had to do he told me this story when I was 18, 19 or whatever, and they had to do 6 months in the emergency room for whatever when they did the pre-med dental school or whatever.
Right.
And so he's working the emergency room late at night, and this lady was masturbating with the old 16-ounce Coca-Cola bottles.
That's wow. very. That's actually a common emergency what? Room. No, no. All I've right. heard this really? This happening. Yes. Yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
And she, you know, it was up in her vagina, mm-hmm. Like probably 2 inches up in there after she got the rest of the 16 ounces up in there. Yeah. So they, you know, they looked at it and pulled it, and it would just go right back in. Like it was a vacuum.
Right.
And I was like, well, how did you get it out of there? You know, and my dad said we had to take a diamond bit and drill a hole in the bottom of it to release the
air. Exactly. Yeah. Dan, hang on, 2 inches in. Show him, Dan, show him 2 inches.
All right.
That's how far in that was.
Oh, yeah.
2 inches, yeah. Go ahead. It's swollen.
Yeah, so,
go ahead.
And I said, so what happened after you cut the hole in it? He said, it sounded like a bottle rocket going off. It was...
Yep.
And then it just slid right out.
Yep.
Wow. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I was like, holy moly.
You got to hope that the person, when you go to the emergency room, the person you have to say these words to, I have a Coke bottle in my vagina, that you vagina. Never run into that person again anywhere. The right. store, because if you look at them, you're going to think,
exactly.
that person knows that I shoved a hot dog
Imagine
or
you,
a Coke bottle or whatever.
Like, you go grocery shopping and you just pick up, like, you know, a six-pack of Coke and you just put them in the fridge and then, there goes the guy walking by.
I don't know if you read my book or not, but I dedicated an entire chapter to my book on this subject about a family member of mine being the emergency room director at Christian Northeast Hospital, and the top five things that he saw that were shoved
George's
up somebody
sponsor
during
brought to you by Tim Whitburn.
Exactly. Yeah. I only talk when you talk, George, because I know you hate it. That's why I do it.
Yeah. Is this the end goal story?
Hang on a second. George, yeah. George, anything else?
I remember this story.
That's it, man. Right, have a good one.
All right, thank you, George.
He calls me long.
Did I give the phone numbers? But I think I did.
I
did I give them?
Did you?
Yeah, I think I did. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Steve is on the phone. Steve, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Terrific. What's going on?
I'm aiming and peeing.
A lot of people are. We appreciate that.
Okay, I remember here a couple years ago where it was like prom season. They're saying for people to, women to sneak alcohol in, they would take like a Kotex or whatever and they would soak it in alcohol.
Ooh. Yes.
And then
vodka.
In.
Yes. No, I've heard of this. Yes. And it absorbs into the bloodstream.
Whoa. Right. That's how they snuck it in.
No, I remember that story.
Yeah.
That's got to sting a little bit, though, right?
Well, they would get drunk, too.
It hurt. That's a good one, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. I
appreciate it.
Is that a screwdriver?
No, there are some messed up.
Did you hear what Dan said?
What?
Screwdriver? Dan said, is that called a screwdriver?
Well, let me tell you a story that reminds me of. I used to live, when I lived in Pheasant Run Apartments in Maryland Heights, and we're in our 20s, and there was a young guy who lived right across an apartment from us, and he still practices. He's a, what's the maxillofacial, what's the word where you put people's bones back together in their face?
It's facial reconstruction.
No, it's like maxillofacial. There's a name for it. I had a researcher look it up. Well, that's what he did. And he told me what would happen is, when he'd come home from work, when you live in an apartment, you don't have a lot of room. You have a little patio or something in the lawn chair. So we'd just sit outside on nice days, and I'd see him, he'd see me, and one of us would walk across over the parking lot to the other one. And I went over one day, and I said, well, how was work today? And he goes, well, today was a day I will never forget. He said he was at the hospital, and another doctor called him and said, I want you to come to the emergency room. I want you to see this. See, he goes in, and they've scoped the guy's stomach. There's a scope down his throat. He said, Ed, the doctor's name is Ed. He said, Ed, take a look. So he leaned like you're looking at a microscope, and this guy on a dare had swallowed an entire set of both flathead and Phillips screwdrivers and different colored handles. He had a whole collection of screwdrivers in his stomach. And I said, wouldn't that puncture, like the end of a screwdriver, punch a hole in your stomach? And he said, actually, the lining of your stomach is so tough, like leather, that no, not unless you add some force. He said that's why when somebody has an ulcer, that's why it's so such a big deal. That's how powerful that acid is, that it eats a hole in your stomach. That's hard to punch through.
Wow.
So they had to cut the guy's stomach open and pull the screwdrivers out. You're not passing screwdrivers.
No.
But what kind of person, if a guy goes, hey, I dare you to swallow a bunch of screwdrivers, what kind of person goes, oh, yeah, okay, well, I'll show you, I'll do it. What kind of idiot does that?
A drunk one.
Wow, yeah.
Gotta be.
It's called maxillofacial surgery.
Spell it.
Maxillofacial.
That's it. Maxillofacial.
And on that note, when I was a kid, I used to love getting the Guinness Book of World Records every year as a Christmas gift.
Right.
I was just fascinated by the pictures. You know, the old giant was always in there, and you know, the bunker twins, the conjoined twins, and they always have pictures. And one year they put a picture in there of a guy who set the Guinness Book of World Records for eating a bicycle.
I read the story. He ground it up into little filings, and he ate a whole bite.
Well, they finally, that started what I believe was them putting parameters on what they'll consider to be a world record in terms of people endangering themselves or just, you know, doing ridiculous things to their body, self-mutilation.
And I read an article on how he did, because I think, what do you do, just eat a piece of handlebar? No, he ground every part of the bike, the rubber tires, everything into, like, powder, and he ate the whole bike, and it took him a while to eat the whole bike. But why?
Remember the guy?
Just to get his name in the Book of World Records. That's why.
And Dan, I know his name was Dave.
Yes.
I remember his name.
In Jamaica. Tim,
we used to take these trips with listeners, and for the first 3 years, we broadcast from Jamaica, Mexico.
Yeah.
We had a guy, a listener, with us in the group, and somebody, because when you're broadcasting from there, it can become very boring to people who aren't there. If you sit there and go, oh, look at that ocean and that sunset. Always tried to find interesting people to interview. And one of the people in our group said, hey, you know that one of the people in the group who's a listener, Dave, eats glass.
Oh,
and I said, what? Mm-hmm. So I met the guy and I said, Dave, is that true that you eat? He goes, yeah. I said, now, your friend on the trip says that you can take a regular drinking glass and actually eat it and swallow it.
No.
And he said, yeah. He did it on the show.
Right in front of us.
And Dan and I would do play-by-play of what, and you could hear on the microphone. I had the hotel go bring an orange juice glass from the restaurant. So we knew it was a legitimate glass. And I'm not kidding. Mm. I still remember the first bite he took.
Oh, my God. I knew.
Did he cut up his mouth at all?
No. Not a drop of blood.
No.
Through the process, we'd have him open his mouth and go, not a drop.
I couldn't have watched.
He said it was hard to watch.
But you could not watch.
Right.
So we sit there, and he takes the first bite, and he actually bit a piece. Look, imagine you hold it up to take a drink. Just take your teeth and you bite a piece of the edge off. He started there, and he would just chew and grind and grind until it was glass powder.
Yeah.
And then he swallowed it, and he'd take another bite. And by the end of the show, he ate the whole glass.
Yep.
And not a drop of blood. It was unbelievable.
Imagine trying to pass
You ever see these guys that can drink a mug of beer, and there's like 50 goldfish in them, and they throw the goldfish back up, and they're still alive?
I've seen that too.
Dan, we had a guy on our trip that did that. He drank a beer mug full of goldfish.
He did.
Yeah.
Wow.
We've had some interesting people. Interesting listeners.
No kidding.
Doc is on the phone. I'd like to talk to him. Doc, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm AM and the PM.
Thank you, Doc. What's up? What's up, Doc?
By the way, you asked one time after I hung up, I heard you on here, say you wonder if I was really a doctor. 35 years ago, there was a show called Dr. Detroit.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
A movie with Michael J. Fox.
No.
Dan Aykroyd.
No, that was Dan Aykroyd. Michael J. Fox was Doc Hollywood.
That's right. Good movie. That's right.
Yeah.
Dr. Detroit.
So anyway. Got me again. Somebody there decided I looked like the guy, Dan Aykroyd. And so they called me Doc for 35 years. Anyway, I did it again.
That's two, man.
Oh, boy.
If you want to hear really X-rated stories or heavy R-rated stories, talk to truck drivers. I've been in trucking business for 35 years. I can't really tell any of them on air. The stuff they see, cars going past them, particularly convertibles.
Yep.
Unbelievable stuff they see.
Doc, since you said that, you just reminded, there's a story that a trucker told me, and I've not even ever thought of it until just now. And it is the most horrific, unbelievable story I've ever heard about anybody driving anything, truck or car. And when we hang up here, I will tell it. But thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, truckers have a different vantage point.
Yes.
They can see down and see what's going on. And, you're right. They got some great stories.
And the guys say that you know, they every once in a while, somebody will look up at them and see them. And they look totally shocked. They just, you know, they're going past it. They don't even realize there's a driver in there. And
there are also people who do it knowing the guy can see it, and they're exhibitionists. They do it to be looked at by the trucker.
That could be, too.
All right. Well, when we hang up here, I'll tell you my story. It's unbelievable. Thank you, Doc.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
In the 80s, I was sent up by Bell Telephone to Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And there is a driving school up there. In the winter, they have a Zamboni machine and an old abandoned runway, and they water it down, and it becomes a huge sheet of ice. And they teach people, cops, school bus drivers, how to drive on the ice. So I was sent up there because at the time I was the safety spokesperson for Bell Telephone. My name was Walter, and we did a whole set of videos, and as Walter, this particular segment was about driving, because Bell had a lot of trucks. It said Bell Telephone, and they had service people out all year. And in the winter, they wanted them to know how to drive on ice. So they sent me up to this driving school. You know who was there going to the school? Cops were there, and I met a cop from Chicago. Truck drivers, school bus drivers, UPS, anybody who drove all year and needed to know, especially in certain states, how to drive on ice. So we start to talk, and this guy from Chicago tells me this story. And he said, for the rest of my life, I will never get this out of my head. He had a motorcyclist commit suicide by deliberately going the wrong way on the interstate and head on right into the radiator in the front of his truck. And he said when he looks up and he sees the biker coming toward him, he knew. Either this guy has no clue or he's deliberately coming toward me. And he said there was nowhere I could go. I'm 70 miles an hour in the interstate. And he said he hit the front of that massive cab. And he said when I pulled over and I went around to the front of the truck, there was no person. There was nothing. There was a bike all completely mangled up and in pieces, mm-hmm. not any sign of the guy. Mm-hmm. And then he looked closer, and in the radiator were chunks of this guy. He had absolutely penetrated the front of this truck. Wow. And then they started picking, when the cops got there, pieces and chunks of them out of the front of the car. He said, that's my truck story. Okay, you win.
He wins that one.
Let me give you one more horrible one, and then I promise we'll stop this. But there are people who experience things that we will never experience, and they're so freakish and bizarre that you know they'll never get them out of their heads. I've had 17 motorcycles in my life. Some were motorbikes, a couple of motor scooters, a couple of big Harleys, a big touring Yamaha. I've had them all. And since I was 16. I bought a Harley in about 93 from a place in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and brand new. And there was a guy that I knew, and I'm telling him about this bike, and he said, I'll go with you. He said, I think I'm ready to get back on a bike again. He had not ridden a motorcycle for 9 years. And he said, and I actually enjoyed riding, but I couldn't ride after something that had happened. He says, I've never been able to get back on a bike. And he said, I think I'm ready. Can I go with you? And by the way, he ended up buying a bike over there too. And we rode the two of us back from Mount Vernon on our motorcycles. Here's what happened to him. What happened to him, when it happened, he wasn't on a motorcycle. He was in a car, and he saw a horrible motorcycle accident up ahead of him. And so there are pieces of the bike. There's the car's damaged. The guy in the car's hurt. It's a mess. And he pulls over. He's first on the scene. And in a very short period of time, because cell phones were around, this is mid, late 80s, the first car to show up that was an emergency vehicle was a highway patrol car. And the trooper got out and asked him, he said, were you involved in the, my friend's name was Ron. He said, Ron, he asked Ron who he was, and he says, I just happened to be the first person. I saw what happened. I saw the accident. And the trooper said to him, he said, we're waiting on ambulance. We're waiting on other troopers. He said, would you mind helping me just clear off a little bit this debris off the highway? And Ron said, I don't mind at all. So he's helping the trooper. There's a bumper. There's a helmet.
Oh, no.
On the road. And he said, I went over to pick up the helmet, and the guy's head is in the helmet. The impact popped his head off. And his, he said, I picked the helmet up, and there's the head staring at me. Mm-hmm. And he said, I absolutely have not been on a motorcycle for 9 years. But he got back on, he got a bike, and he rode again. How about that? What? How do you ever get that image out of your head?
You got to pick up a helmet and there's a face staring back at you?
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
There was a guy in Belleville when I was in my late teens, and I had known this guy because I'd met him in junior college, another place I got kicked out of. And he hit an old man. He was coming over a hill, and it was late in the day, almost dark, and this old man was walking. You're driving, and on the shoulder, going the same direction as traffic, he's facing away from you. But he said, and I read the story in the paper of what happened. I never talked to the kid it happened to because he went into a mental institution. He topped a hill, and with no warning or no time to swerve, he hit this old man who was walking in the lane, right in the middle of the street, hit him in the back. And this guy's head came off through the windshield and landed on the seat next to him.
Oh.
I'm not kidding. And he ended up in a mental institution.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yep, that would do it. That would do it for me, man.
You mean because of the trauma that he endured?
Well, yes. He looks over and on the seat next to him is an old man's head.
Okay, I can see, you know, that you're having a bad day and, you know, you're going to the bar that night.
Yeah.
But to end up in a mental institution?
No, no. He, I don't know how long he was in there, but they had to put him in a facility because...
Forever?
No. No, I don't know how long. All I know is that's where he was, and they said he was so traumatized. I mean, the guy couldn't even talk. He just was, it just did something to
just
him.
Broke him, probably.
Now, I don't know how long he was there, but I knew people who knew him, and I had known him in school, and they said they went to visit him, and he was exactly what you would expect to see in a mental institution. Mm. Just a guy who had lost his mind. So I don't know if he recovered or not, but there's another image.
Oy.
You look over, and it was a bench seat truck, and there's the head in the seat next to you. So, yeah, that would do it. I promise we're done. That's it.
When was that? How, what year?
About 1970.
Whoa.
Right around there.
Wow. All
right, that's it. No more horror stories. But you see, there are people who have to go through some stuff that, and this all started how? How did we start?
No idea.
You asked Limey about a restaurant story.
Yeah,
started with a restaurant story. And then it just progressed from that.
Yeah.
Then it went to picking up a head and a helmet, now, and then a head flying in the car. Yeah.
Now, I would also like to state that if I am not here tomorrow or ever again, and I'm dead tomorrow, I want to tell you why. Tomorrow morning, I have my, and I have it every 3 years, my nuclear thallium cardio stress test. I know, it's a big deal. And they pump dye in your body.
Right.
So they can see the blood, and you have to get on a treadmill. And I believe the objective is to run you or fast-paced walk you on a treadmill just to the point where you are ready to die, and then they stop. No, I'm not kidding. I've had it before, and I'm not kidding. Have you ever done this?
No.
They don't do it so that you die.
And when I can no longer, and they go, you okay, you okay? And you're hooked up. You got 1,000 wires on you, and you're hooked to the heart thing, and they just keep going. They ramp it up, and they speed it up, and they ramp the LA and speed it up. And when I just feel like I'm ready to die, I'm going to have a heart attack, they shut it down.
And what does it prove?
They want to see what my arteries and are capable of pumping.
Are any of them are blocked?
Yes. Actually, the point of the test is to discover
that's
any blockage.
Do that?
No. If somebody has, let's say, bad knees and they can't get on a treadmill, they can do it with an injection that makes your heart same level, but that's more dangerous to do it the injectable way.
Because what they're trying to do, that's why they're making you physically exert yourself, is because it'll pump that dye all around your body.
And they want to see what your arteries are capable of handling, and that's how they know if there's blockage. I'm not kidding, man. And I hate it, and I dread tomorrow, and I won't sleep tonight, and I'll be so glad when this stinking thing is over, but I just can't stand it. No.
Why?
They're talking to you. They're monitoring you.
They want to talk to you. How you doing? How you feel? Okay? And then they tell you, now 4 miles an hour, now we're going 5 miles, and they're going to elevate another 10 degrees, and they tell you all through the thing. And it's about 11 minutes that feels like 12 hours. Mm. It's just, I hate it. I wouldn't hate it if I weren't in horrible shape. If you're in really good shape,
but hang on a second.
You just go, bring it on, crank it up.
You're in better shape now than you were 3 years ago. I mean, you know, you've lost quite a bit of weight now, so it might not be too bad.
No, it'll still be horrible.
You may lose
weight, but when you're still in bad shape, you're in bad shape. And I know that I'm being a wussy, but with the P in front instead of a W, and I know this is nothing to complain about. And I'm not complaining. I'm just letting everybody know I hate this, and I dread it so much. I just do. Every 3 years, I know it's coming, and I just... The gal called me today, and when I saw it was the cardiologist's office, here's how I answered the phone. I said, please tell me that he's sick, and we can't do this tomorrow. and we're having to cancel. She said, nope, I'm afraid not. See you tomorrow. Just wanted to make sure that you're aware you have an appointment tomorrow. I said, okay. So when I come in here tomorrow, it will be right after the end of this 2 to 3 hour.
So you're going to be in a great mood then tomorrow, eh?
Oh, I will, because I'll be alive.
You'll be in better shape. But you are in a little better shape.
What would really suck is if the test was after the show. Can you imagine what a jerk he'd be if it was after the show?
Yeah, he's got a point. It's a good thing it is before the show.
You are in a little better shape now you've been dancing and stuff.
That, you know what? That is true, though.
Yeah.
Blind Frank is on the phone. Now, we have Blind Bob. We have several blind listeners, and I'm proud of that. Blind Frank, welcome to 590. How are you?
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Frank. Blind Frank.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
Hey, I was just listening to your show, and I was either wanting to tell you the funny story about my friends eating dog food sandwiches and vomiting.
I have heard of that, people doing it.
Yeah, we actually had a bet. There was some hot sauce called it was called some kind of insanity sauce. Crazy Dave's insanity sauce.
Is that to mask the taste of the dog food?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
But it will make you have ulcers. One drop of the stuff is perfect for a whole bowl, whole pot of chili.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. I don't understand the hot pepper people. I don't get that they like that. I don't like it.
They like to torture your taste buds. They're toasted.
Blind Frank, have you ever eaten dog food?
I have not.
I've eaten dog treats. You know, the little treats they make for dog, milk bones and that kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I ate a couple of those, and it wasn't bad.
I had one of those dog Oreos.
After
ones.
You did that, did you scoot your butt on the carpet?
Yeah, I did. No, but they won't kill you. It won't kill you. Blind Frank, are you totally blind?
I have been blind this way since the last time we talked.
Well, you have to understand, I don't have the greatest memory, and we have four or five blind people that call us, but you've been blind totally since birth?
No, sir.
And you would, let me see how good my memory is. Did you lose your sight at like 50 or something?
No, I lost it at 37.
Okay.
50.
Okay. And refresh my memory, how'd you lose your sight?
I had retinal detachments from some experimental surgeries in the 80s, radiokeratotomy, where they cut slits in your eye.
I had radiokeratotomy. I had it in 22 years ago.
That's like the ancient Egyptians. They did radiokeratotomy.
Now, that is very unusual, though, that somebody goes blind from that procedure. That doesn't detach your retina.
No, it took more than that. It took hot sauce poured in both lenses. burn my cornea.
Whoa, hold on. Who poured hot sauce in your eyes?
I was eating some Nick and Elena's pizza and down on Woodson Road there in Overland, and the bottle exploded in my face as I was sucking to get a drink out of it.
What?
Wait.
And it went in your eyes?
Went in a vacuum in reverse and sprayed me in the face.
Whoa.
That's, hey, I cried all night. That burnt.
Sure it did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. Yeah, because radiokeratotomy doesn't detach your retina. I figured something else must have happened here.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, my mom was subject to the wet or the dry...
macular degeneration.
Right.
So you're right. Genetically disposed to that, too. So, wow, you get all kinds of things going against you with your eyes. So are you totally, you're totally blind?
I got friends like you who love me.
We do love you. Are you totally blind, Frank?
Yes, sir. I walk with no cane in my house.
Well, I salute you.
The Lord gave me the speech to talk to you and the wits to handle your conversation.
Well, I salute you.
Smart, Frank.
No, I'm not.
Punchline, buddy.
Blind Frank, I salute you. I admire you because I've said many, many times, and I've had a lot of stuff done to my eyes. If I lost my vision... at any point in my life after I had seen, I don't know how you deal with that. That's a tough hand to be dealt. It really is. So good.
I must say, if there wasn't a creator that created me to think these thoughts and feel this way, I wouldn't know how to feel. So I just want to give credit to the good Lord above who saved me.
Well, good for you.
Christian.
Good for you, man. Yeah. Good for you. I admire the fact that you're able to move on. And I only have a minute here. Let me ask you a question. Did you go get some training, like a Braille school or something? Did you do that stuff?
You know, I didn't. I know a fella who's got a 4.0 grade point average at Wash U right now, and he's completely blind. Look him up. His name's Danny Lawrence.
Wow. All right. Well, Blind Frank, nice to hear from you. We got to run. Call anytime. Don't be a stranger. Okay.
Hey, you guys have a good one. And tell me another one, Frankie.
Okay, Blind Frank. Bye-bye. Blind Frank, Blind Bob, a couple others out there. We welcome all blind listeners.
Because,
see, radio, that's the one thing. You don't have to see to enjoy radio.
Now, is Blind Bob with 1-0, or is that a different
Bob? No, that's
Bob?
Different Bob. Okay. Bob with 1-0 is not blind.
Because I was wondering why you didn't ask Blind Frank if that was Frank with 1-A.
No, and then there's Sunset Hills Bob, who's no longer Sunset Hills Bob. He's Elgin, Illinois Bob.
Got it, yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm.
We've taken a little break here. It's a very interesting hour to me. To me, it was. And the show really is done just for me. Johnny Londoff. I just spoke to Johnny Londoff right before we went on the air. And I think he wanted some kind of like a report card on how not so slim Jim Sappho and John 3-6 did. And I said they actually did very well. And business is pretty good, thanks in part to people who go in there and say proudly that they're AM and the PM. Pretty soon, folks, we're going to have a discussion here on the air about why more than ever, and it's about to become even more important, that you let advertisers know why you're there and how you heard about them. And you tell them, and it doesn't matter if you say AM in the PM or large morning show in the afternoon or mention my name or say 590 The Fan. It doesn't matter, any of that. It's about to become extremely important. And I appreciate the fact that when an advertiser like John Londoff lets us know on a regular basis that every day customers come in there and they shop there because of this show. Thank you for that. And for those of you who haven't, and maybe you haven't shopped at Johnny Londoff Chevrolet because you haven't been in the market for a car. There are a lot of people that don't buy cars, but every 10 or 12 years. And if you're one of those and you haven't been in, please consider including them when you're shopping for your next car or truck or SUV. I think it's an experience you'll be glad you discovered because I don't believe you have it anywhere else. Yes, buying a car can be something people dread and don't look forward to, but not Johnny Londoff customers. They've been at this location I'm about to give you for coming up on 60 years. The Washington Elizabeth exit off Interstate 270 in North County. And, of course, you can look any hour of any day at their fantastic website. And it really is slick. It is Landoff.com. Coming up, Dan Buffa. We're going to talk TV movies. I haven't talked to him yet about Joker. And we both have seen it since we were together last Tuesday, so we'll talk about that and some other stuff, and whatever you want to throw into the mix. It's 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Jim Hayes. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River.